Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
We are back on the streets of San Jose.
How would anybody let us do this?
We are celebrating the second month anniversary of WWDC 2018.
Yeah, we've decided to come back every 2 months now. It's just,
yeah, why
we
not?
Missed it. Couldn't stay away.
It's nice and warm.
It is nice and warm. I feel it is warmer than when we were here last. I have found it a little toasty.
I imagine it's probably a break for you from the...
It's not incredibly humid, which is nice. Like, that was just getting unpleasant at home. So it's at least hot. It's a dry heat, as they say.
But nobody wants to talk about the weather, Dan. They're here to listen to us talk about other pointless things.
Things that are not.
So
tonight.
The sheer verisimilitude of the Six Color Secret podcast is taken by us sitting on a street as little streetcars go by. Somebody was loading a truck earlier.
It's just a real slice of life.
Yeah. This is what it's like in San Jose when Apple's not here, which is quieter.
Yeah, even though Worldcon is not a small conference, like, there are still thousands of people here.
Yeah.
It doesn't quite feel as teeming as WWDC did. Like, I walked into some of the same coffee shops, and they were virtually empty.
Yeah, social policy.
Yeah,
quiet.
I was hanging out. It was not
Italian
much going
cafe
on.
We went in, again, often bustling.
Not a lot of people
It is
here.
Friday afternoon, and it is the summertime.
True, true.
My drive down was pretty easy, but yeah. So we are here for the World Science Fiction Convention.
Indeed.
In fact, I should mention to all our dear listeners who have hopefully already picked up their copy of Dan Morin's debut novel, The Caledonian Gambit.
Yes, yes.
That you should get excited because a new novel in that same universe is going to be, was announced today.
That's right. Yeah.
The Byron Agenda. Finally, that book I read like 3 or 4 years ago is going to be real.
That's what happens.
People are like,
when you...
is there a sequel? And you're like, do, there is another book in the universe.
There's another book in the universe. We'll put it that way.
Yes.
Or as the analogy I've been using is, you remember, you know, you ever watch a TV show and you watch the pilot and then they're like, ah, this is good. It's good enough to get picked up for a show. But like, we're going to tweak a few things. We're going to change this character. We're going to do like a little rejiggering and then we'll go off and launch it off. This is like the Caledonian Gambit was like the pilot.
This
is like, all right, we're getting into the series. This is like a good jumping off point. You can sort of like the concepts there, but you can sort of
start a new plot. Some of the minor characters in the first one and some structure of that leads into what the story is all about.
So it's a good place to start. If you're a fan of the first book, I think you will enjoy this one. You'll recognize some familiar faces.
So rush out now and pre-order
right now.
The Byron Agenda,
please,
by Dan Morin, which is going to come out when?
March 5th, 2019.
Nice.
That's not that far away.
No.
As I keep
fortunately,
realizing.
You've already written it.
Yes, yes. Fortunately, that one is written. Yeah, this is very exciting. I'm really psyched to be working with Angry Robot Books, who I've been a big fan of for many years, and I know many of their fine authors. And they're great people. They're really engaged in the science fiction community. So it's cool that I finally get a chance to work with them.
We totally got two people looking at us as they walked by. And I imagine what they're like is, oh, is that another podcast? It's probably what they were thinking.
Another podcast on the streets of San Jose.
So typical.
Can't walk a foot without tripping over a microphone cord.
As so often happens.
This is not the first podcast that either of us has recorded today.
No, I'm on my third.
Yeah. I'm only on my second.
Trying to think what's going on. It's a relatively quiet Apple period now because we're waiting for the more specific rumors and leaks of an upcoming iPhone event because we're probably only like 4 weeks away, 3 weeks away
so
from...
So at a certain point, like, stuff has to go into production and that's the part where it gets dangerous because all this stuff that was just germinating inside of Apple has to eventually get ready to be disseminated.
Right.
And so, like, in the past years, not only have we seen the supply chain stuff get a little more real as we get closer, but, like, we've seen numerous cases of Apple slipping up slightly because they have to prep this stuff to eventually go out to the public, and sometimes that means there are some rough edges.
Exactly right. So I feel like my feeling about the Apple stuff right now is that there are more rumors than there's room for. Hey, there's probably a clever phrase, turn of phrase
rumor
we can work
for?
On there.
There's rumor now.
No rumor at the end. I don't know. But you see my point? Like, okay, I get that there are the iPhone rumors.
Yep.
And I get that there's iPad rumors.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also new Mac rumors. And they could announce all of those products in September. But that's a new Apple Watch, too. That's an awful
lot.
Show.
It's a packed show. I didn't think, you know, for a while there, I was sort of on the train of, like, we're going to have two events. But then when they did the MacBook Pro bump in July, I thought, well, if they're bumping that now.
Yeah, but if they're new... Yeah, if they're new Mac laptops, though.
But if they're like new, right? Yeah, like not just a bump.
You want there to be more to it. I think they could do it. I think that they've actually been criticized that their last couple events have been pretty light.
Yeah.
I think they could do a jam-packed event and get them off right for the holiday season. In fact, my guess is that they'll drop everything that they're comfortable announcing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's possible that they've got some stuff that they're just not ready to ship, right?
I think that Mac thing is a big wild card because it makes perfect sense for the iPhone, the iPad, and the Apple Watch to all get updated in September.
Like, sorry, Dan, my bus is here. I gotta go.
Bus. it makes perfect sense. We always see a new iPhone every fall for the last many years. The Apple Watch has found itself on a similar schedule to the iPhone.
Sure.
Which makes sense because you're going to drop a new watchOS at the same time you drop a new iOS. And the iPad is close enough to both of those that there's no reason that you couldn't add it into the mix. I don't think... I have not heard any rumors about a new Apple TV, so I would doubt that there's anything coming for that. I mean, there'll be a tvOS update, but even that was fairly minor. There was not a lot of stuff in this tvOS 11 that they announced. So the Mac one, to me, is the real question of, like, well, do you do it at the same event? Do you do it at a separate event? Do you do it by press release? Do you do it by small, like, briefing?
Yeah, like, because they could do it any way they want.
Mm-hmm.
And the iPhone is the most important thing. And
yeah.
It is a hard... I mean, they could. They really could. They could legitimately... Because the fact is, it doesn't take a lot to launch a product.
No.
In terms of, like, the stage presence. I think there is some logistical stuff in terms of the PR and working with the mm-hmm. press and all of those sorts of things. But in terms of stage presence, they can roll out a Mac and say, look, let's talk about the Mac. Mac is great. We have this new product. You know, spend a few minutes on it and move on.
Right.
But they do also have to have their PR staff, has to have, like, review units and work with briefings and things like that. And there's a lot going on there that maybe just practically... it's too much to do in one event. And that's what I keep coming back to is I feel like we're not going to get people, and people shouldn't get their hopes up. We're not going to get brand new consumer Mac laptop strategy and new Apple Watch and new iPhone models and the new iPads.
I mean, a 2-hour event is that's just not enough time. I mean, usually the introduction part of the iPhone alone takes close to an hour. I feel like just at the time they go through all the new features, they lay it out, they've got commercials, they've got demos, like, you know,
Well, plus, don't forget they're going to restate what's in iOS 12,
Mojave, WatchOS 5. I mean, all that stuff is going to get rehashed.
We get the replay from WWDC.
I mean, they can always make
here.
That briefer. It's
They can. But again, it gets jam-packed in and you lose focus. And the stories are going to be the next day. Look, let's be realistic here. The next day, the stories are going to be new iPhones.
Yeah, right.
And if there are other products, it'll be new iPhones. Oh, and also other products. Yeah. But that's it. That's all it's ever going to be.
And there's still an open question of how many iPhones, right? Like, the rumor mills now seem to be like, you know, like three different.
Yeah, I mean, I keep expecting that they'll update the 10, they'll add a 10 Plus, and they'll also do a, you know, this 9, basically, that's a iPhone 10 style, but not OLED and cheaper. But the iPads are the one that, like, it makes sense from an iOS standpoint. They have in the past released iPads later.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what we don't really know is, like, they've only done the big event at the Steve Jobs Theater.
Right.
So... I do wonder, like, what's their interest and willingness to do a second event anywhere? Like, I'm not sure they want to do another event, even though they have done them in the past, where they've had their big event, and then they've had the little event at Town Hall. But now with the Steve Jobs Theater, are they going to do two Steve Jobs Theater events?
To have to be a big event then?
And do they, like, right, because do they want to do a little event? Can they do a little event? Or do they just not even bother with an event?
Well, it explains one reason I think that we have seen these alternate events this year between the education stuff and the MacBook bumps going to, like, you know, small briefings instead is possibly, you know, they don't want to make everything. There's still a level of import, right? When you say we're holding an event in the Steve Jobs Theater, people are coming thinking like this is a big deal,
exactly.
And if you can't have everything be on the same level. Like, some stuff is going to be bigger than others, and if you try to, like, if it's like, oh, well, we have a second event, also the Steve Jobs Theater that just has MacBooks.
This one's at the Michael Spindler Theater.
Somewhere on the grounds. We're not going to tell you where.
It's the Woz Theater. The Woz Theater is
there's
like
no
a little
seating. Everyone's
sunken,
on segways.
No, it's a little sunken amphitheater. that's by the lake at Apple Park, and it's just outside, and it's nice.
It's where they play Segway Bowl.
Yeah, I just, it's a big question, right? Because they're changing their strategy a little bit in terms of rollouts, and I do wonder what form this is all going to take, because there's just a lot of it. Like, I think the watch and the phone go together, but like iPad, will it be there? It seems like the intelligence is pretty good that they're going to do a completely new iPad Pro.
Everything about that makes sense to me. Every and you know, not all the rumors will be true, but everything.
The iPhone
that's 10
for the iPad Pro, which makes sense. The iPad Pro is their high end iPad. Making it different from the regular iPad is a good move.
And they want to expand Face ID, right? Like that's part of their platform now, right? Like in the same way we all expected Touch ID to come to the iPads. You know, there was
exactly.
If you want an adoption of that technology, then you got to put it on all your capable devices. So
that's the real mystery is that simultaneous? Does it come later? Seems like the iPad Pro would be a product you would want to make a big deal of.
Yeah, and there's always
then again, Apple did the education event where it was just that one iPad.
Like, yeah,
that was all. So there's a question of if they would do, you know, do you pack it all in at once or do you do some other stuff? And I don't know if there's a clear right answer. I mean, I would like to think that the two events thing is the right way to do it, but we've yet to see them in the new Apple Park campus do a second minor event at the Steve Jobs Theater. Well,
and there's also the question of audience, right? I mean, they could get away with just doing the iPad at that education event because they were targeting, even though it was a publicly covered event, like there's a question of the iPhone, the watch, the iPad all make sense for your September event. It's the holiday buying season.
Right.
I get the feeling that Macs are they're far less impacted by a holiday season. I mean, I'm sure they go up, but the swing is not as big.
Right.
And I don't think it's as crucial that they get those out at that time. They can go a month later without it being a problem.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not sure, to the larger point, that the Mac needs the piggybacking on the iPhone event to be...
Right.
To have attention paid to it.
Well, plus, everybody who are Mac fans will be annoyed that they got sidelined.
Maybe
you know?
That's the strategy: is that the Mac stuff is just not going to happen in big events anymore, and they're going to pick their members of the media to brief on it and roll Mac stuff out that way.
I think it'll really depend on the significance of it. I have a hard time imagining them do that for like whatever their reimagined Mac Pro is, right? Like that's clearly a big product, even if it's
and
a
yet
small
nobody
market.
Nobody will buy them.
I know it's a small market, but they want, I feel like,
I don't know.
There's a PR angle for that. Like, look, we are still taking this seriously. That
there is, but is it a, we're going to come send invites and have people come?
Yeah, I don't know.
To do it. I'm not sure. One of the things that is happening with these Mac announcements is Apple saying, we don't need every product to speak to everybody.
Right.
We're, you know, pro products, we're going to have the pro, we're going to get demo people, and we're going to have the pro video editors there, and that's it. Like we don't need this to go to everyone. The people who care about this will see it.
Right.
You know, is the iPad Pro that kind of product? I don't think so.
It is,
and are the consumer laptops that product? I kind of don't think so either. So I don't know what they're going to do, but it just feels like there's too much for them to do in one event. The agenda seems so long right now of what everybody's hoping for.
Yeah, I think that's probably the case. I don't know what that second event looks like or whether it's an event at all, but something else is, I think we need, something else is going to be happening.
I don't know.
Another shoe to drop. But it's still, I mean, yeah, still August. August is traditionally a season where not much happens because everybody goes on vacation.
Yeah, it's true.
So it's...
And here you are in California again.
Here I am in California. It's a surprise, as much a surprise to me as it is to you. But,
well, I mean, the Worldcon's been going to San Jose for a while now.
That's
so.
True. That's true.
But it is funny that we're back here. I've definitely had all those flashbacks of WWDC and Apple. It tells you something about how Apple fills this neighborhood.
Right.
That here's a convention that's decently attended, but what it doesn't have is it's not full plus another convention's worth of people
right,
who
outside.
Are not going to the convention, but just are on the outside going to events and ancillary events.
Sure,
and
right. And I mean, it tells you what it's like when you have a conference that's also not really as strictly limited. And it's, you know, like WWDC has been a lottery for many years now. Worldcon, it is sure, certainly there is a point at which registration closes, but I don't think they hit their capacity even. So you know, a lot of people are actually actively attending that conference, as opposed to, you know, not everybody can get into WWDC, or not everybody like you and I, for example, often comes here. We don't come here for the content of most of the conference itself.
Right, sure. Totally.
So, yeah, I think it's a different feel, but it's interesting to come to the same place for a totally different feeling event.
Yeah, I'm happy. I got to use my, you know, San Jose knowledge from the last two WWDCs. Mm-hmm. I know where everything is here. That's good. But it is a little bit strange to be back. But that's fine. I think Apple made a good decision in doing WWDC here. And
yeah.
I'm looking forward to next year. You and I can be back here in 10 months and do this all again.
Probably not twice next year, though. Probably only once.
Probably only the one time. Yeah, it's true. Anything else going on that strikes you in the technology world?
Not a lot happening. There's been, we could talk really briefly if we want about Twitter, which is everybody's favorite technology subject these days.
Ugh.
Is there anything good we can say about Twitter?
The thing that really got me yesterday was they had this completely disingenuous
yes.
Twitter thread from the head of product, basically saying, you know, we're turning off all these APIs because they're only used by 1% of Twitter developers, which is like a totally bizarre stat, because there are lots of Twitter developers who are letting you like attach their web service to your Twitter account. But what they really should be talking about is all the users of the Twitter clients who use those APIs that they shut off.
Right.
And they're also a little disingenuous, because what they're saying is, well, you know, we can't do that, so now we had to turn them off. But there are existing APIs that do exist now, but you don't have access to them without paying some exorbitant amount of money.
Expensive.
So that's not really true. Well, and then we'll try to figure out why is it that people want to use a third-party client and not our Twitter client.
Yeah.
It's like, who are you? Are you not, like, Twitter has had years of knowledge of people using these third-party clients, and yet they're acting as if they're surprised somehow that people prefer the third-party clients to Twitter? It's completely...
disingenuous is just the right word, because it's that moment of, like, you guys have been around for 12 years, like... You don't get to pull the, like, oh, we're really not sure how our business works anymore.
Yeah, and you moved against the clients like 5 years ago, and I've been sort of like slowly strangling them without actually killing them.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, why is that? Maybe you should kill them, or maybe you should let them flourish because it's not as if, the other thing is, it's not as if Twitter can't tell them what to do. Twitter dictates what they do. That's why every Twitter client has the same, like when they switched from likes to faves everybody had to change to the heart.
Mm-hmm. Right, and it's weird because there's certain things that they haven't done, right? Like there's no ads in third-party clients.
But they could mandate
they
that
could
they
totally
put ads
do
in
that.
There.
And it's weird that they didn't, because in some ways, and they don't, it's just not said anything about that, right? Like, it's not even, like, part of me wondered if that was the justification, but as several people rightly pointed out, like, if that was really what it was about, they could just make that happen.
And, again, it is their service to do with what they want, but I think one of the problems all along has been that Twitter simultaneously doesn't see why anyone needs to use a third-party client and also doesn't invest any real effort in making their client apps good.
Yes. Especially, there isn't a Mac app at all now.
And so no wonder people want these third-party clients. Why should you be surprised by that?
Why are you one thing that's bad?
And if another developer wants to build another face on your service and you're still getting what you want out of it, why not let them?
Yeah, I don't. Make
them do what you want, right? Make them put the ads in and do whatever feature implementations they need to do, but why not let that... It's this just bizarre, like, we want to exert control, but not really, but...
The illusion of not controlling things. Yeah, I don't entirely understand what their model and methodology is.
Dan, I think Twitter is a badly run business.
Yeah.
I think that's the bottom line, is I think they don't know what they're doing. And then I think it comes from the top. I think they've had leadership turnover, which can't help.
Yeah.
But then when you get the leadership of somebody like Jack, who is, hides behind his own rules as a reason for why he can't make a stand about the content of his network, like, it, at some point you do have to look at it and say, I don't think you guys are confused about this. I think that you are playing dead, that you literally just want to let we don't want to police content on our service right. because we benefit from having bad content on our service.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, think about how much engagement it drives in terms of people like
the outrage machine.
Just the people like, look at this thing. How can Twitter allow this thing? Right. Like, and it's like, okay, we've just generated hours of tweets about this, and that's people staying on Twitter, eyeballs on Twitter, like posting things and responding, like in that sense. And so, you know, we'll see. I'm curious. I think it was today the deactivate day or whatever.
The API
I don't know, but like this.
Today, right? That's
right.
People
are suspending
their
accounts.
People were supposed to suspend their accounts today.
Yeah, I mean.
I'm never going to do that
because
it's too important for what I do that I be on Twitter. But I definitely have reduced my kind of level of interaction on Twitter.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely,
my 100%. Engagement is down on Twitter.
Yes. And I mean, it's very nice that I will say this, like my experiences with Twitter because of what I use it for have on the whole been pretty good, especially recently. Like, you know, I posted a thing about my engagement. I got like just no one was a jerk in that. Everybody was really nice. I posted my book today.
A high level
really
of engagement
nice.
In that.
Yes,
post,
well, I mean, that's what I look for, a high level of engagement. But like that reminds me about what I liked about this whole as service is like it was a way to communicate with people, not necessarily people who I knew, that was just pleasant. Like
yes.
and that was cool. Like it was nice because people were friendly. Like
well, I find it really valuable for feedback. I mean, what we do is throw our stuff out there into the black hole of the world and hope that somebody, you know, is reading it. And so if somebody reads or listens and comments and asks a question and all that, that's great. Right. I love doing that.
You know, it also enabled us to, like, get rid of comments on websites, right? Like, you know, in some ways we just, all the stuff that we hated about comments is now on Twitter, so.
Yeah, but I
you don't have to read them.
Well, yeah, you don't have to read them. You can mute them if you want, and they're seeking you out to give you a direct comment, which is, I feel like, different than posting a kind of like graffiti at the bottom of the
right.
thing that you made.
So, but like, you know, the wonderful thing about the internet and also the terrible thing about the internet is the ability to connect with all these people that you don't know personally, and it's a double-edged sword, but I'm with you. Like, you know, I have my book announcement today.
Yeah.
I have a far bigger audience on Twitter than pretty much anywhere else.
Yes.
So I need to have that as an option because there's no place else I can go where I can do that kind of that level of of promotion and engagement. And like, I also don't want to be the person who's just showing up to promote myself because everybody gets tired of that too. And I like reading stuff on Twitter too. Like, I do legit like. There are lots of people who are funny. You know, I see some delightful things every day, but, you know, digging it out of the morass has become
a
lot more work.
It's gotten a lot better for me because I've just muted and blocked a lot of people.
Yeah, sure.
That helps a lot. It turns out every now and then I see a reply from somebody I follow to somebody I follow with a third person included. And I'm like, I'm not following this conversation. And I'll look at the thread and it'll be the third person in the conversation is somebody who's being a jerk. And I'll realize, oh, I already muted them, so I didn't see this conversation.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of, that's a nice bit of reinforcement of like, oh, yes, this is an unpleasant person. I already had an opinion about them being unpleasant. Here they are again. I don't have to see them. And there's something, you know, you're creating your own environment for this stuff. And, you know, I just don't, you know, I don't want to see jerks. That's it. I'm not trying to create some sort of perfect bubble where people don't give, unless you praise me sufficiently, I don't want to see you.
Yeah.
It really is just, I don't want to see people who are being a jerk.
Yep. So
it's not that hard.
I am sad to, like, you know, so Tweetbot deactivated like their activity.
Right.
Pain and Twitterific today view, which are like these sort of like letting you track how your tweets
all based
are doing.
On those APIs.
This activity API. Although I will say, just as a note, I'm not sure this will last, but I happened to... So Tweetbot updated their Mac client like a couple months ago, and it didn't have that. It instead uses like more of a Twitter-style activity notifications window. I'm not sure if that's still around, but I didn't like the new Tweetbot as much on the Mac, so I kept the old one. And I was just on it on my laptop, and still works.
Yeah, I think...
For now.
They're slowly cutting off access to that API.
But it's
by the way, if you're on the iPhone, you should just get the Twitter, even if you don't use it, you should get the Twitter app, and you can turn on notifications in the Twitter app.
I will probably end up doing that, but I've resisted.
I don't do notifications on Twitter, so it's not a problem.
I only do it for DMs, and for me, I just wanted like the ability to look at a tweet and be like, who liked this tweet? Which apparently you can't do
now. That is nice. That was my favorite thing about the Twitter app for the Mac that they killed.
Yep.
Was that it had a pretty nice sort of activity view of who was faving and liking your stuff and not just replying.
Yep, Tweetbot. That was my favorite Tweetbot feature. And I was always so perplexed as to why they didn't include it in the new version of Tweetbot. And now I realize
when you do
two and two together.
You know, bad pun on Twitter, you want to know who appreciated it.
Exactly. I need to know who my audience is.
It's people who like bad puns, basically.
That's
and Caledonian Gambits. We got to make a whole new series of jokes about the Byron agenda.
I know. That's what it's really opened up a rich vein.
I'm going to get like a calendar agenda planner thing and tape a bunch of bear aspirin to it or something.
Now, the football club has already started, or some fans of the football club have started following me on Twitter, so they're going to be a little disappointed.
Yeah. Just put a soccer scene in there somewhere.
Yeah, I'll just shove it in.
Yep. Oh, well. Oh, the my Macworld column this week was about the FaceTime delay.
Oh, yes,
delay.
The group FaceTime.
And, I mean, the short version of that is, I'm okay with Apple saying, hey, this feature is broken. We're not going to force people to use it and make a bad first impression. We're going to wait.
Totally makes sense. I agree with you as far as that goes. I think for me, the sticking point, and you alluded to this in your article as well, is like it became a pattern.
Yeah, yeah. Last point is, I think it's a good move if it's not ready to not ship it, but why did you think it would be ready?
This is the other thing. It's like, it is the same thing with AirPlay too, as you mentioned, right? Like, if they're, what is happening that you keep misjudging wildly in some cases whether or not a feature is ready?
Right.
Because
that's the problem.
That is not a thing that Apple used to do. Apple used to be very good about, like, if we say this thing's in, it happens.
Well, yeah, and sometimes it would ship and be buggy, but
sure thing.
It would ship. And but again, how can you be a better judge of the ship date of your item? Or one of the things I suggested in the piece is maybe just embrace the fact that when you're talking about iOS 12, you're talking about the iOS releases that happen over
cycle,
the life of that product from September through the following September, and say, here are all the things we've got planned for the next year.
Yes.
And it's not all going to ship in September,
no. But
it'll ship over the next year in updates to iOS 12. Maybe you could just... they're already doing that,
right,
so maybe
I agree
they should embrace that.
That market, that messaging would be way better. Although we were talking about it on the Rebound this week, and I think John Maltz pointed out, it's like, oh, you know, they're delaying it so that when they release it, they can also release the open source version of FaceTime finally that they promised 10 years ago.
Womp.
So, turns out building that up over time is hard work.
It's hard.
My Macworld column, which just came out today as we record this, was about some of Apple's more recent media moves. So the TV app, their integration with Movies Anywhere, and their redesign of iBooks. Mm-hmm. Which I think is an interesting move for them. I was looking at, I don't think it was Federico, but I think it was someone else in Mac Stories had a in-depth look at iBooks or books in iOS 12. And it looks like the Apple's taking some aim at Goodreads, some Goodreads functionality. They're redoing a lot of the UI. And part of me is wondering if they're feeling like maybe they've had enough time since that whole Department of Justice settlement to feel like, maybe we'll get back into books again. I don't know, but I think it's been interesting to watch their as they are prepping to do this streaming service. It's been interesting to see the decisions they've made regarding other media.
I suddenly started getting all sorts of push notifications on my TV app,
mm-hmm.
which I turned off. I was watching a show on Netflix, and a push notification appeared over the show saying, like, this baseball game is close
inning.
I'm like, No, don't do that. So I turned all that stuff off.
I do like a lot of the TV app. I have to say, I do like the ability to track shows I'm watching and like figure out, well, what's the next episode? And it just on the Apple TV, it just shows up in the top there. And I like those aspects. It still has some flaws. And there are stuff I don't care as much about the sports aspect. And I really wish that Netflix would get on board with it. But I also totally understand why they haven't.
Yep.
It doesn't make any sense for them, but they are kind of the big holdout. But yeah, I think it will be interesting to see when the streaming service comes out, how that interacts with all this third-party stuff that Apple's sort of collating. Will they push their own streaming service stuff like in front of everything else, just alienating everybody, or will they find a way to integrate it well?
That's the challenge that Amazon has, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where they have a player platform with other services, but they also want you to watch the Amazon stuff, and it's a challenge.
Yep.
For sure.
Yep. Really interesting to see how that develops.
All right. Well, who knew we'd be back here in San Jose? I don't think anybody will have just walked by and taken a picture of us like the last time.
Seems unlikely.
Seems unlikely.
But we did have buses, trams, and planes going by, so yes. I really feel like we've collected everything today.
We've covered. Well, that's what it's not my washing machine going.
Jason,
but
don't look now. Here comes a boat.
All right. Well, before the boat splashes us with water, because we will get wet, we're in the first row. We will thank you for being a subscriber and supporter of Six Colors. We appreciate it. And until next week, when we're back in our respective places. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.